thought I would talk about acceptance and rejection and how life changes dependent on how you choose to respond to life situations. As an example, there was once a woman who was given a promotion and she became the manager of her office. And the office was normally a fairly positive environment. But she discovered, after a week or so, that the atmosphere had turned really negative, and this concerned her. Fortunately, she was a meditator. So she decided to explore. She didn't have any expectations. She didn't make any assumptions, but she decided to explore her experience meditatively, mindfully, see whether she could discover what was going on. And to cut a long story short, she realised what it was. If she was busy with something, with a client, or busy on the telephone, or busy doing some project, and someone, another member of the office, came along and needed her help with something, she would always reply, "No, not now." And this struck her forcibly, and she decided, right, well, I will experiment with saying, in those situations, yes, but not now. A very small difference. Within a week, the atmosphere of the office had transformed, because she'd gone from an attitude of resistance, of this is a disturbance, this is getting in my way, to one of acceptance. But all it was a change in her attitude, and it made a complete difference to the atmosphere of the office. Now, an important aspect of the Buddhist training is understanding perception. Perception changes based on the kind of actions that you perform. Perception is what we call a resultant. It arises as a result of action. Just as feelings arise as a result of actions, so too do perceptions. So the perception was transformed by the change in the attitude and the behaviour of this particular manager. And that's the point I want to get across. When we resist, whatever it is that we resist, we recreate. So if we come face to face with something unwanted and we resist that and believe it shouldn't be there and act upon that attitude, then what we get back is an intensification of that unwanted situation. However, if you practice acceptance, then everything changes. You find that that brings... Well, let me try to use another example to try to explain what I mean. And this one's closer to home. You'll recognize, a lot of you recognize this one. When somebody first comes along to learn meditation, we have a chat to begin with. And in the course of explaining what the meditation is and what the training is all about and what the Buddha's teaching is all about, we make it quite clear that there are certain requirements that need to be fulfilled if you wish to come along. So somebody enters into a 6-week introductory period. We ask people to meditate every day, to keep the 5 Buddhist precepts, not to mix the training up with any other system that you might have been using, and come along regularly on Wednesday evening in order to give the training a fair trial. And also included in the requirements is that if you wish to carry on subsequently, you're very welcome to, but it does include doing a minimum of a week's retreat every year. Now, if somebody is very accepting, not at this stage saying, yes, I will do a week's retreat every year, but is accepting of the way in which the centre wants the training to be done. So it's accepting of the fact that this is what life is presenting me with. It's presenting me with this option. Yes, I can learn to train in meditation and mindfulness at the centre, but I have to bear in mind that if I continue with it, then there is, as part of the deal, an agreement that I'll do a week's retreat every year, right? Now, if somebody accepts that, and they're in a very strong position. All the cards are in their hands, because then they can enter into that 6 weeks quite happily, knowing that, okay, well, I'll experiment with this. I'm not saying yay, I'm not saying no. I'll experiment with this for 6 weeks and see how I feel. Even at the point at which the 6 weeks are up and they decide that they wish to carry on, they've still got tremendous leeway. The cards are still very much in their favour, because at that point they can say, well, do you know, I'm really enjoying this, the people are great, the training's really firing me up, it's introducing me to all kinds of new concepts, the meditation itself seems to be generating a certain amount of calm and happiness. Yeah, I want to carry this on, but oh, I'm not sure whether I'm prepared to do a week's retreat or not. Am I prepared to do that? I don't know. I don't think I am. But even there, somebody still has all the cards in their hands, because they can say, carry on the next season and perhaps do a weekend retreat, just as a way of introducing themselves to life on retreat, just to see whether it takes, just to see whether it's going to be something useful. They can find out directly from their own experience all the way down the line. And perhaps it reaches the point where they've done the weekend retreat, they enjoyed it, but now they face that decision. Well, if I continue, that's the agreement, that's the way the centre works. They may choose not to continue, which is absolutely fine. Which is because there might be something which is just simply too important, which means they're not in a position to devote a week of their year to practicing intensive meditation, which is fine. But of course, that means that person then decides not to come along to the centre. On the other hand, of course, they may equally come to the conclusion that this is the best thing since sliced toast, and they truly get stuck into it, and they say, right, okay, well, it's going to be awkward. I'm going to have some conversations with a few people in order to allow me to, but this is important enough, or I'm prepared to make that necessary adaptation to my lifestyle in order to do it. So all the way down the line, they've been in control. It's their choice. Okay? Now, consider the person who really enjoys coming along to the centre. They enjoy, they think the people who come along are marvellous. They enjoy the challenge of the meditation and the teaching. But they can't understand, for the life of them, understand why they're being pressurised into coming on retreat. Huge difference there, isn't there? And the difference is that they haven't accepted that the centre wants to train in the way it wants to train. It's essentially saying that the centre should change the way it offers the training to suit me. I want it to be done my way. I can't see why I should be pressured into doing something I don't want to do. As a consequence of that resistance, what's the person's relationship to the training, to the centre, to the teacher? There is always going to be an underlying conflict, a desire to escape from the problem. And every 6 months, of course, the problem re-emerges, because we start handing out all the forms again. And suddenly it's like, what is the perception? I'm being pressurised again. When in actual fact, someone's just handing out the forms, because that's what we do. It's their individual perception based on their resistance. Do you see what I'm saying? Because I think it's really important to understand that. So we can see that dependent on one's attitude, you get a different kind of perception that arises. So does this mean then that we're just supposed to accept suffering and do nothing about it? Is that what acceptance means? It's just like caving in and just accepting that, oh, life's suffering and there's nothing you can do about it. It's very interesting. It's really helpful to understand that there's a what we call a passive, resultant side to life and an active, volitional side to life. Let me give you an example of what I mean by that. I'm sure we were all shocked by the Nepalese earthquake that took place recently. I travelled to Kathmandu and to see Durbar Square and places that I was very familiar with through my travels being utterly obliterated like that. It was really quite shocking. But I completely accepted it. Because how on earth could I resist the fact that huge tectonic plates, one coming from Tibet and one coming from India, and I can't remember which way around it is, but one of them is forcing the other one up, and the Himalayas is going upwards. What is the point of me resisting that? How could I possibly prevent that from happening? My meditation isn't that good, guys. Nobody's is. There is an aspect of life which is just the way it is. It couldn't be different. There's no way you could stop an earthquake from occurring. There's no way you could stop the devastation. Somebody who resists in that situation may very well say something along the lines of, well, it should have been different. The building should have been built better. They should have been earthquake resistant. They should have been this, they should have been that. Yeah, great. But what was the reality? And what we're interested in as meditators is the reality. Does that mean we just sit there and do nothing? Well, no. Even the fact that you accept the fact that this has occurred doesn't prevent you from acting. It doesn't prevent volitional behaviour. Now, at this long distance, given that we're tied up with the business that we're doing, we can't go over there and literally shift the rubble, but we can perhaps make a small donation if you felt that that was appropriate. You can do something about it from a position of acceptance. And that's the important thing to remember, is that acceptance doesn't mean indifference. Acceptance actually requires an awful lot of wisdom. The Buddhist path, the training, is all about learning to accept life as it really is. So it's learning to see that passive side of life, that side that merely occurs and then passes away due to conditions, and that we have no real control over that. And also seeing where we do have control, where our volition comes in and we can affect and make changes. And fundamentally, what we're being asked to do is to explore life from a position of acceptance, not resistance. There is a world of difference, say, between going for your first day at work in the restaurant kitchen and being confronted by this huge pile of washing up that needs doing, and going, oh no, I can't believe it, this is awful. And from a position of acceptance and going, right, okay, this is what I've got to do. Let's see if I can go about this mindfully. Let's see if I can do this mindfully. The point I'm trying to make is that we always have a choice. Whether we enter into life from a position of acceptance or from a position of resistance. If we resist, we create hell for ourselves. If we operate from a position of acceptance, doesn't mean just a lazy, indifferent acceptance of everything. Starting from a position of acceptance gives us a cool, calm, controlled, explorative, is that even a word? Explorative, is that? Well, I just made a word up. I'm getting some nods. It allows you to operate from a position of exploration and discovery rather than from fixed ideas about what should and shouldn't be. We know this in the meditation. I think that Al and Jackie, when they called the centre the House of Inner Tranquility, that was a bit of a misnomer, a bit misleading. Perhaps it should be called the House of Inner Tranquility sometimes. House of Anxiety sometimes. But then how many people are going to come across to a meditation centre called House of Anxiety sometimes? But we know from meditation that hopefully I keep on reminding you, is not to come from a position of expectation that meditation should all be about cozy, calm, peaceful, happy states. Because you've got hell right there. Because the moment you enter into a meditation with those expectations, and what you see does not conform to your expectations, if you are resistant, you create this hell of control and manipulation and pushing and pulling. And that was exactly not what the instruction was. The instruction was to rest content in the moment, watching things rise and pass away. And note, it doesn't say what it is that you note. It doesn't say, note lovely, peaceful, calm states of mind rising and passing away, and forget all about all those that neurotic preoccupation for a while. No, it says, whatever comes up in the meditation, that's what you note. If you start from a position of acceptance of that fundamental principle, and you start from this, because the fear is, of course, I'll lose control. Irritation, hatred will be rampant. Sensual desire will be rampant. I'll fall asleep. I'll worry my head off. I'll explode. Anything. The fear is the loss of control. There's all kinds of different fears involved. But if you start from a position of acceptance, you are in control of the meditation. The meditation is not in control of you. And you start from a position of exploration. Nothing is presumed. You don't know what's going to happen. And that's what gives meditation its dynamism. That's what gives it its fascination, because that's what you want. You want to be interested. If you're interested, if you're not saying, oh, it should only be this and never that, but you're just interested to see what comes along, what comes up, that interest brings with it tranquility, because an interested mind isn't wanting life to be different. So the idea is that we sit, we rest, perhaps watching the breath in order to help anchor the mind, and we're interested where the mind goes, because it's not going to stay put, is it? And it goes off into a daydream, we note daydream. And it's so much easier to note, there's so much more space in the mind to recognize the arising of a hindrance, because you're not battling, you're not fighting, you're accepting. And so the resultant perception is, oh, this is going rather well, I'm rather enjoying this, because you haven't built up that expectation, and yet you retain the control. That's the lovely paradox. The more you resist saying, oh, I've got to be in control of this, the more tense and agitated and painful it becomes. The more you accept the instruction as to watch exactly what arises, the more in control of the situation you are, even though you don't know what's going to happen next. Wisdom comes out of that exploration, because you get the real direct experience that nothing that you look at lasts. In a way it sounds so obvious, but wisdom comes from not resisting, from accepting, from exploring, and coming to see directly that unwanted perceptions don't last. A memory of some terrible thing you did back in 1995 arises in your mind, and then along with it comes a painful feeling, and it's like, oh, I didn't, did I? Yes, you did. You're just experiencing the result of those past actions. And the wisdom is just to remain with it, to not seek a resolution, because that's what we do, is that we go into solving mode. We believe we have to solve this problem, and we go over it again and again and again and again and again. But actually you find that just by observing the characteristic of that unwanted memory, its characteristic to change, to become other, to arise and pass away, is all you need to understand about it. Yes, it's painful. painful feeling. So you note painful feeling and you don't seek to get away from it. You just rest with it. What happens? The painful feeling passes. Gee, how many painful feelings have you experienced in your life? Must be some astronomical number, and yet you're really concerned about this one? So it's learning to accept the true nature of what you're confronted with, and that it won't last, and that is wisdom. You hear people say, you know, oh, she's been battling with her depression for years and years and years. And you say, well, stop battling then. Stop trying to resolve the depression. That's the toughest thing of all. But the desire to get in there, the resistance to the depression, comes from a sense that if I don't do anything, it will always be there. And so always fighting. Either fighting, say, the past memory that you can't put down, or fighting the very fact of depression. But the more somebody is able to learn and to rest and sit with whatever kind of neurotic preoccupation it happens to be, of course, that mindfulness practice is surrounded and supported by all the auxiliary aspects of the Buddha's teaching. But the more you learn to sit and not solve the problem, the more you see the transient nature of the problem, and it does not need resolving. No neurotic preoccupation needs resolving. Trying to resolve everything is the neurotic preoccupation. It's control. It's wanting. It's resisting. The more you accept, the more you allow, the more you get a new set of perceptions coming up, a different way of seeing the world. Another aspect of what you see when you're accepting and exploring and discovering the world is the fact of conditionality. The fact that one thing owes its existence to a whole myriad of different conditions, an infinite number of conditions. So everything that arises is conditioned by a whole group of other things, all of which are transient. And seeing this deeply has a tremendously freeing effect on the mind, because you realise that you just cannot control life like you thought you could. You just see that life is built up of these infinite number of conditions, and you just simply, you could never get to the bottom of it all and controlling it all. And what happens is the mind relaxes. It accepts that so much of life and the suffering of life is inevitable, it's normal, it's the way it has to be, and the mind relaxes tremendously. It accepts the evidence of what it finds. One of the interesting things that disappears when somebody really truly discovers conditionality is their belief in politics. That's good news or bad news. It's not that you stop caring, because like I say, acceptance does not mean indifference. It's rather you get really wise about what is possible and what's impossible, what you can control and what you can't control. And it's like the tectonic plates of the Indian subcontinent. You realise that you just cannot control things. So what emerges out of that is a more pragmatic understanding of how you can help people, and a realisation perhaps that politicians are no wiser than anyone else. I feel extremely lucky to live in Bradford and Avon. It's an absolutely beautiful town, except for the traffic. But you can't have everything. And it's truly delightful walking about for, you know, so privileged to be able to live in such a lovely town and the countryside the way it is. And you walk about, like yesterday evening, you're walking through the town and you go down by the river and you hear the wrens and their constant warblings, and you hear the 100,000 songs of the song thrush, and the swifts have arrived. I don't know if you've noticed, doing their amazing aerodynamic swooping in front of you and swooping along the river and up and round, chasing the insects. And there's this beautiful evening light, and it's so peaceful, and the tips of the buildings are illuminated by that light, and the Packhorse Bridge is reflecting in the river, and there's this lovely sense of calm and peace, and it's just so delightful, it's just so effortless. And as you're walking around, you start looking at the people. And one young woman is sitting on a public bench, and she's got her head in her hands, and she's completely oblivious to all of that. She's deeply stuck in her world. She's deeply stuck in her head. And the magic is passing her by completely. And you walk on a little bit, and there's a drunk couple squabbling vehemently, using very foul language, squabbling over some tobacco. It's a power trip between them. And they're completely oblivious to people walking past and anything that's going on. They're completely caught up in their world, their power struggles. And you walk on a little bit further, and there's a man and perhaps his son. And the man is just talking and talking and talking, and the son isn't listening, just going away from now, every now and then, and there's no communication. And they're all trapped in their own little worlds. They're trapped inside their heads. And they don't see the wonder and the mystery, because they're so resistant, each in their own way. And their resistance is recreating their neurotic preoccupations again and again and again. And this is the world, this is human beings. And yet, if you surrender, if you accept, if you no longer seek to control the world, but you just embrace mindfully and explore and discover your world, you begin to see how magical it is. You begin to see how wonderful. It's just a flight of swift, just moving down, going off like that. It's the most beautiful thing. You can't. It's free. You can't believe it. I said, "Well, that was wonderful. Thanks for that. How much do I owe you?" No, it's free. You get to see all this. It's all there. It's all waiting. It's all available. It's always new, dynamic. It's nirvana. It's freedom. It's freedom from all this neurotic preoccupation. Are you trapped inside your head? Do you think that you're trapped inside your head? Do you think there's a me who looks out at these eyes, out at the world? Is that what you think? You're not. You're not that. You're not that diminished, trapped, contained individual that you think you are. And the whole purpose of this path is to take you from this resistant, controlling, manipulative individual to reach a point of acceptance. And in that perfect acceptance of life as it is, but with wisdom, so that it's the wisdom that understands how it really is, there's this moment of wonderful recognition that you never were trapped behind your eyeballs looking out at the world. You're something so much more. so much more, but it's indescribable. The beautiful thing is that you leave those people and you carry on walking because you've perfectly accepted that that's the way they are. You see their suffering, but it's up to them, isn't it? They want to do something about coming out of it. So you accept the universe as it is. You accept what it's showing you, and you carry on walking. You watch the golden light. Most people miss the profound. And they miss it because it's so simple. It's so utterly simple.